Reynolds v. the CB Sports Bar. Mr. Steese.
May it please the court, Tom Steese on behalf of Loretta Reynolds, plaintiff and appellant in this case. This case comes on for plaintiff's appeal, asserting that the trial court erred in granting the 12B6 motion to dismiss for the fact that Ms. Reynolds, in her pleadings, the complaint and amended complaint, stated sufficient facts under notice pleading to allow this cause of action or her causes of action to go forward against CB Sports. The plaintiff is not required in the pleadings to assert specific facts or submit her case for trial at the time she files her amended complaint. The rules under 12B6 and is interpreted by this court and the United States Supreme Court have said that she has to state or allege allegations that define her causes of action against the defendant. The causes of action against CB Sports are specifically listed in the amended complaint, but more specifically at paragraph 19 for the negligence cause of action against CB Sports, that says that the defendant's jersey, which is in essence the CB Sports, but and its employer agent bartender, was an active accomplice in the ensnaring of plaintiff Loretta Reynolds with the other two defendants, which ultimately led to her injury and hospitalization.
Well, in your brief, you said that she had asked for a telephone book and the bartender refused to give it to her, but you don't have that in your complaint.
Your Honor, I don't know that we necessarily do. Again, I don't believe that the plaintiff isn't required to state all specific facts to help establish your case. Again, we rely upon...
That's true, but I don't know what the source of the telephone statement in your brief is. I mean, you haven't had discovery or anything, have you? Or?
No, Your Honor.
That's what she told you, presumably.
Yes, sir. And Ms. Reynolds had memory loss initially, and as time has gone on through therapy and such, things have improved. But you're absolutely correct, Judge Posner, that there's been no discovery per se that is going to help ferret out facts and evidence to support the plaintiff's claim. There was some initial discovery sent. There were subpoenas issued and such, but none of that has any bearing relative to the motion to dismiss. And the defendants, at some point in time, may be able to re-urge the court to consider whether or not a summary judgment may be appropriate. But for purposes of their motion to dismiss, the 12B6 motion, plaintiff's allegations should be taken as true or at least viable for purposes of defeating or...
Well, did the allegations include the bartender vouching for the two customers?
Your Honor, I believe that it did. I have to go back through specifically to do that, but the allegation at 19 covers really the conduct, acts, omissions, and such of the defendant and the bartender. That in our allegation it says, at worst, defendant's jersey and or its agent bartender was an active accomplice in the attempt to ensnare plaintiff Loretta Reynolds into the unsavory and unwelcome sexual situation. And I don't want to go into a lot of facts, Your Honor, but as Judge Posner brought up with the phone book is only one of several factual issues that need to be ferreted out to establish, again, evidence that a trier of fact could weigh to determine whether or not Ms. Reynolds has a cause of action sounding in negligence that starts with the very acts of the bartender and then leads into more or less a conspiracy between the bartender, the bar, and these other two defendants. And that's why the court erred in granting this motion to dismiss. Again, the defendants may at some point in time choose to file a motion for summary judgment after we've had discovery and evidence, and perhaps their theories may be supported. The court may determine that they're entitled to judgment as a matter of law. But the plaintiff, again, is at an unfair advantage in not having the discovery completed and having to try her case basically just on the pleadings that were before the court. And the law is clear, I believe, Your Honors, that the plaintiff, under a notice pleading requirements, only has to allege facts sufficient to put the defendants on notice of the claims made. The discovery will ferret out the evidence, and at some point in time, either side, plaintiffs or defendants, may be able to file motions for summary judgment on various issues of law and then submit, depending on the rulings of the court, the matter to the trier of fact. And that's what the plaintiff and the appellant is asking here, is this court to reverse the ruling of the district court, allow this case to go back to the district court so that discovery can be had in this case, and then the matter either proceed to summary judgment determinations or to trial and let a jury decide.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Stees. Mr. Hasenstab?
May it please the court, counsel. One thing I wanted to correct in the argument made by Mr. Stees, the amended complaint does not contain any allegations that our representatives, that CB Sports Bar's representatives, vouched for the character of these two alleged assailants. That's something that came out in an evidentiary hearing that was held more than a year after we had been dismissed from the case. It was not before the trial court at the time of the 12B6 motion.
What evidentiary hearing are you talking about?
After my client was dismissed from the case, the case proceeded against the two alleged assailants. A default was taken against one of the assailants, and an evidentiary hearing was held to establish basically damages. Excuse me?
Part of the default.
Correct. Yes, and that was something that was not... None of the testimony of that hearing was before the trial judge at the time the 12B6 motion was taken.
And you obtained a verdict against Carson of $1,500,000?
I believe there was a verdict against Carson. I don't know the amount off the top of my head. There was a substantial verdict against Carson on the default. But that occurred a year after CBS Sports Bar had already been dismissed for failure to state a claim. The trial court correctly, in my view, relied on the Mitchell, Seventh Circuit case of Mitchell, which I believe is on all points, and that was also a 12B6 motion in which the court said that the facts that were alleged in the Mitchell case did not give rise to a cause of action under Illinois law, and this being a diversity case, Illinois law is what's controlling here. And in Mitchell, I described in our brief, the defendant had a warehouse or some kind of business, and a delivery person came, and the owner instructed them to park on a adjacent lot, which they did not own, but which it was alleged in the complaint that they knew that there was criminal activity, regular criminal activity on this adjacent lot. The delivery person parks on the lot as instructed by the defendant in that case and is subsequently a victim of a criminal attack. This court in Mitchell said that there is no duty on the part of the defendant to protect that delivery person from a criminal attack because the attack occurred off-premises. And the appellant here has cited no authority that calls Mitchell into question, either from the Seventh Circuit or from Illinois. And the facts in this case are...
Well, how far would you push that? I mean, suppose there was some terrible blizzard and, you know, her car doesn't work and so on, and the bartender says, well, I'm sorry, it's closing time, now you'll have to leave. Then she freezes to death. You don't think You don't think that's actionable?
Well, if she's still on the property at the time, I think that's the distinction.
He's closing, and he's telling her you have to leave. I'm closing.
As long as she's on the property, I think the case law, that's where the distinction lies. Not only in the Mitchell case, but in the state courts, state opinions that I've cited in my brief, that once the invitee leaves the premises with the limited exceptions.
What if she asks him, is it safe for me to leave with these people? And he says, yes, it's safe.
In that case, I still believe you're under the Mitchell. And I mean, that fact has not been alleged in the complaint, as I pointed out.
Yes, I know that.
But if that were the situation, if he specifically asked them, I still believe that there's no duty.
I don't believe that.
Okay, there's the Gustafson.
Well, what sense does that make, right?
Well, there's the Gustafson case that I cited.
Give me some reason why that would be a sensible rule, right? She asks him, would it be safe? He knows it's unsafe. He says, sure, it's perfectly safe. Now, why would you want to have a rule which said that the bar wasn't liable for negligence in that situation?
In my personal opinion, or based on the case law,
something sensible, right? Something that would make sense to a layperson.
Okay, I could see where a layperson would, particularly in an invitee relationship, where at the time that she's an invitee of the bar, we have a duty to protect her from any type of criminal activity. If we specifically instruct her to go to someone who we know is dangerous.
I'm talking about my hypothetical case. She asks, is it dangerous to, to do something? Is it dangerous to go down that road? Should I go the other road? And he says, no, that road is perfectly safe. And he knows that road is dangerous and the alternative would be safe.
Okay, if he has actual, I believe the distinction there would be if you had actual knowledge that there was a danger posed by whatever course of action that she's requesting or that he's recommending. I believe if we expand that to the point where they know or should have known, then I think that we're running into a dangerous territory here, because then it would impose a duty on the part of the property owner or the business owner to investigate.
No, I'm just saying he knows it. I didn't say anything about a duty to investigate. I say he knows it's unsafe, but he tells her it's safe.
Okay,
he doesn't want to be bothered, right?
If he knows it's unsafe and he tells the, misrepresents to her that it is safe, and she takes that course of action, I could see where there would be potential liability. I don't think the case law supports that.
He can't give her misinformation, but you're saying there's no duty to warn.
No, I don't know. There's no duty to warn here, because they would have to establish that he knew that. Well, you have to allege these facts. None of this has been alleged in the complaint, and that's where we are.
Well, it's a question. How much has to be alleged in the complaint? The paragraph 19 is very broad.
Well, paragraph 19 says, if you read that, that's in the context of Jersey serving her alcohol, which the trial court has said that there can be no liability based on the service of alcohol.
And Illinois doesn't have a dram shop.
Illinois has a dram shop, but this case was untimely. A dram shop claim has to be made within one year.
But that wasn't my point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The point is that you do have off-premises liability if you overserve.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the trial court correctly found that this was not a dram shop case because it was untimely filed. So his only remedy is under a negligence theory. Now, his paragraph 19 states that it was the service of alcohol, which was the act of compliance on the part of Jersey's, that led to this bizarre set of facts.
It says at least knew. It says that defendant at least knew or should have known the defendants were getting plaintiff Loretta Reynolds intoxicated for the purpose of sexual exploitation.
That's correct.
Well, that sounds like more that's more than dram shop liability. That's saying that he knew that they were making her drunk so that they could rape her, and that sounds pretty serious.
Well, and the allegation there is limited to the service of alcohol. And
I don't understand what you're talking about. You mean the bartender can serve alcohol to someone who he knows is as a result of that service is going to be raped?
The dram shop law, and as the Illinois Supreme Court has interpreted, is an exclusive remedy for any service of alcohol, regardless of how egregious.
In that case, there's no civil remedy?
No, regardless of the egregiousness of the activity on the part of the bar, the remedy in it is exclusively in the Dram Shop Act for the service of alcohol. The Dram Shop Act does not recognize any liability for the service of alcohol to a plaintiff, to a person who comes back and sues the bar. And in any event, any allegation regarding the service of alcohol that's based upon the service of alcohol is barred because it was not brought within 1 year.
If the complaint just said they conspired take advantage of this woman sexually.
I agree. If there was an allegation, that takes a very liberal reading of the complaint, which if you read the allegations in the complaint, there's nothing in there that could lead to a reasonable inference that there was a conspiracy on the part of Jerseys to get this woman drunk and to the point where she was going to be raped. The only allegations is that they knew or should have known, you know, that they were getting her intoxicated and were going to use her for whatever reason, which, you know, obviously we're going, you know, I don't know what basis of fact he has to say that. But aside from that, all you have is paragraph 5, which says that she asked for a cab and they said none was available. There's no allegation in the complaint, which was what we're talking about here, that she asked, are these people okay, that we instructed them to go with these people, or that there was any type of conspiracy on the part of Jerseys to have her sexually molested. If that was his allegation, he should have raised it in the complaint. The complaint, as it's written, does not state any cause of action against CB Sports Bar, as the trial court correctly stated.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Hayes and Stab. Mr. Steese, how much time does he have? 5 minutes? Okay.
Thank you. May it please the court, we are not dealing with the Dram Shop Act. We are dealing with the Negligence Act. And Judge Posner's hypotheticals and discussions about the recommendations, while that type of evidence is not before the court, that evidence was at the damages hearing that the counsel referred to. Again, plaintiffs simply did not have the opportunity for discovery sufficient to address all these issues that would go to trying her case on the merits. Again, the 12B6 motion was premature. It should not have been granted. The pleadings that the plaintiff submitted when filing her lawsuit and the amended complaint set forth sufficient causes of action against the defendant CB Sports or Jerseys, as it's known, for her case to go forward through discovery. And if at the conclusion of that the defendants file a motion for summary judgment and the court, based on the application of the law after reviewing all the evidence, finds that in fact this case does not merit a cause of action for her to make a recovery under the theory of Mitchell or any of the other cases cited, then summary judgment would be appropriate. But I believe that the evidence that's going to come forward, and again, I can't testify to that, what was in the damages hearing, is going to show that there's a marketable distinction between this case and Mitchell. This case should be reversed and remanded, and the case should be allowed to go forward through the discovery phase, and the court's decision on the 12B6 motion should be reversed, and I would respectfully request this court to do that.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Hazenstab and Mr. Steese.
Thank you, Your Honor.